This week, we look at if Apple has done enough to ensure Apple TV Plus will be a success now everything is known about the release, and at new data that shows it'll have a tough job gaining a foothold in an increasingly crowded market. Let's get started.
And welcome to this week's edition of the Video News InScreen Media podcast. And Colin Dixon from InScreen Media is with me. I'm Will Richmond from Video News. Hey, Colin, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm about to get on a plane to go to IBC, which is the big broadcast show in Amsterdam. It's Europe's biggest show, kind of like at NAB. I've got a packed schedule, so I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that on the podcast next week. But this week, we have some updated information on our friends at Apple and their new TV service, right?
Yeah, finally, after all this time of Apple teasing details here and there about the Apple TV Plus SVOD service, they finally did the full reveal, if you will, on pricing, content, devices, how it's the promotions, how it's all going to work. And we've talked about Apple TV Plus in the past, and so this new information is kind of a good opportunity for us to update our listeners on what we think the potential is here of Apple TV Plus and what the opportunities and what the challenges are going to be. So from my perspective, I thought they did a lot right in their announcement. So first of all, the service is going to launch on November 1st. It's going to be $4.99 per month. It'll include 9 original shows, lots of A-list talent in there, some shows that look really interesting. There will be a 1-week trial period. It's completely ad-free, so it's a straight-up competitor in a sense to the model that Netflix has pioneered with no ads, not even a hybrid ad option. There will be some binge watching available. It's not full-on binge watching, full show drops like we've seen with Netflix. It'll be limited to 3 episodes per show to start, and then they're going to let them out once per week, so it's sort of a hybrid version. There will be account sharing for 6 family members to share the 1 individual subscription, and importantly, all shows will be downloadable, so you can take them on the road with you when you don't have any internet connectivity or any Wi-Fi, so full mobility of the shows. So I think all those are positives. But the biggest tailwind, actually, the biggest momentum builder that Apple TV Plus is likely to enjoy is that it's going to be bundled for free for a year for buyers of new or Apple refurbished devices. So iPhones, iPads, iPod Touches, Apple TVs, and Macs. People who buy any of those devices, they have 3 months to activate an Apple TV Plus service. And what I think all that means is that you're going to have millions and millions of Apple device buyers and viewers that are going to become exposed to Apple TV Plus at absolutely no cost. And there's basically going to be no friction to activating the service, because the Apple TV app is already pre-installed on all these devices. Actually, it's going to be installed on all Macs as well, running the latest Mac OS. So I think that's a huge, huge benefit that Apple is tapping into here to try to build its audience base. And that exposure seems really important for Apple TV Plus, because they are coming late to the party, late to the video party. We've talked about this before, but obviously Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, YouTube, and lots of others have been in the market with compelling content, original content, for a while, building loyalty to their services. We have new services that are launching from Disney, Warner Media, NBC Universal, et cetera, coming soon. And this sort of era of peak TV, there's just more high-quality video being created than ever. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about some of the key findings that the latest TiVo Video Trends Report found that really kind of support that. But that's the environment that Apple TV Plus is launching into. So they really need to create the easiest on-ramp possible for viewers to give Apple TV Plus a try. They don't have a ton of content to start with, but over the course of the year, they're going to be adding more and more. So I think the idea is that if they get more people in the door, they get them exposed to Apple TV Plus, the content builds, then over the year, they hopefully for them get enough of them to like what they see and decide that they want to stay and pay. So that's, I think, sort of the game plan for Apple. It's I think it's a pretty bold bet, going originals only. We know that basically all other services, whether it's original cable TV networks or HBO or Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, have all gotten basically their start by licensing content from others that was already familiar. And that sort of comfort food nature of well-known and loved programs, whether it's Friends or Seinfeld or The Office, that really helps to get people acclimated into a service, because new shows are obviously by definition unknown entities, and it's hard to predict their success rate. So that's, however, the bet that Apple is making, is that these new shows can break through and connect with audiences. It's not going with a licensing strategy at all. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. What's your take?
Well, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised, Will, that this really is Foursquare behind Apple devices and the Apple ecosystem. That certainly makes sense for the company and probably makes sense for their users. So it's very, I agree with you, it's a very good strategy, I think, to give it away free with new devices. That will guarantee you a sizable audience right out the gate, because, I mean, who's not gonna enable the service? If you buy the new device, right, you're almost bound to. I think the appeal outside of the Apple ecosystem is still there, but is much weaker. So, of course, because there's no support for Android devices, and we're not sure if there ever is going to be support for Android devices, then some key features like download will never be available to somebody subscribing, say, through a Roku that has an Android phone. So, you know, that's an issue. But I think the way I'm really thinking about this service is a little bit different to Netflix and to Amazon Prime Video and Hulu and all of and Disney Plus, of course. And it strikes me that this is not really a service that I think Apple is expecting people to make their anchor service, the service that they go to first when they want to watch television. It's a service that they go to weekly, maybe, to catch the latest episodes of what I have to admit are some pretty interesting shows. Like, I'm looking through the content slate, there's a couple there that really appeal to me. You know, For All Mankind, that's certainly right up my street, and I might give C a look to, you know, see what that's about. So I think they've got an interesting content slate. The pricing for those who have to pay at $4.99, well, it might still be a little expensive, particularly as they're releasing the episodes on a weekly basis. So you're going to end up being subscribed, I'm guessing, for a few months. But then again, you know, looking at it from their point of view, it's like a movie purchase, right? It's just how much you'd spend to rent a movie. So I guess it is kind of appealing, but it's not what I would call an anchor service, and people won't consider it an anchor service. And what that means is that it's kind of vulnerable. One of the things that we're seeing in the data right now, Will, is of course, is that there's a lot of people now who've got a bunch of services, and we'll actually get to that in just a second with the TiVo data. And they're really at the point where they're saying, well, you know, if I'm going to take another service, then I really got to get rid of something. This Apple TV Plus is not going to, if they have something like a Disney Plus or Netflix or Amazon Prime Video or Hulu, this service, there just isn't enough there, I think, to unseat those services. So, as I say, I think the appeal inside the ecosystem for Apple is pretty strong, and there's a lot of people who are probably going to go for this, and almost all of the people, I think, who buy a new device will go. The appeal outside is less strong. That's not to say that I don't think they won't get a few subscribers. I mean, I'm certainly going to give it a try, and I suspect that there'll be other people who will give it a try. But anyway, I think, as you say, good strategic move. It lets them put their hand on heart and say in all honesty that there are millions of users. And of course, the one thing that we both forgotten to mention, but we should, this is a worldwide release. So they say 108, I think they said 108 countries or something like that. So they're really, you know, everywhere where Apple devices are sold, I imagine this is going to be available. And so they're really going to have a worldwide audience. Of course, it might be a stronger play in English-speaking countries first. But you know, that should guarantee them a pretty big audience, I think.
Yeah, you're right. That international release also, the service is also pretty pivotal. And as is, I think, the point you raised very well, the idea that, you know, not available for Android, that is something that is a departure from all the major video services that we've seen that are all available, of course, across devices and across mobile devices. So Apple, to your point, is sort of inherently limiting. It's inherently a service that's meant to support their own device ecosystem. That's a big device ecosystem, though, and I think you're right that it's probably not, Apple TV Plus is probably not going to become anything resembling an anchor service for the foreseeable future, given that it's a limited array of content and also certainly the lack of Android support. But at the same time, it feels like the pricing is pretty modest. The free year is a big benefit. And if the shows really start to resonate, they could generate a lot of buzz and a lot of viewership. And ultimately, I think that's what Apple is looking for, is kind of a relatively modest start with an eye on the long term.
I think you're right. I do think, however, that, you know, it's great that they're supporting Samsung smart TVs and Roku and Fire TV. It's great that they're doing that. But the problem is there really isn't mobile support for anybody outside of the Apple ecosystem. And although it is true to say that the majority of viewing of this type of content will be on the television screen, it is also true to say that everybody sometimes wants to watch on mobile. And that will be a, you know, that I think that will be a big problem for them going forward. So maybe this will goad them into providing an Apple TV app in the Android store. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I'm not sure I bet on that. But one thing that is for sure, and we touched on this just a few minutes ago, is that Apple TV Plus is coming to market at arguably the most intensely competitive time for video services. And which is only poised to get even more competitive. And the TiVo Video Trends report, which was released this week, which you wrote about and I've reviewed also, really speaks to how competitive the environment is. And we wanted to just dig into a few of those data points that show what's going on in the market these days.
Right. And so I mentioned the number of services. So one of the things that TiVo does is they do this survey of US consumers and asking them about their viewing habits. And it turns out in this survey that when one of the questions they basically asked is how many services people use. And they cast their net fairly wide. So they're not just talking about SVOD services here. They're talking about SVOD, free-to-web services, free-to-air TV, pay TV, and even including things like people watching video on Facebook and Snapchat and YouTube. So it's a fairly broad net. And what they come up with is basically we're using 7.2 services, which they say is a 14% increase year over year from last year. So this number, I think, is entirely believable. I'm pretty sure that I watch video from a lot of different sources. and including some on social. So that's a pretty interesting number. But one of the things they point out, which I thought was particularly interesting, was that people really think about the services in different ways. So, for example, they said that about 39% of folks use Netflix to look for new movies and shows, while only 27% do that with pay TV and 26% with Amazon Prime Video. But if they want to watch the next episode in a show that they're regularly watching, well, you would expect those with pay TV to go right there, and that's exactly what they do. Pay TV wins that pretty strongly. And interestingly, when it comes to rewatching movies and shows that they've already seen, it's actually very easy. But I was surprised YouTube came out ahead there with 18% saying that they would turn to YouTube to try and find something that they'd already rewatched. And I have to say, YouTube's featuring much higher in my viewing this soccer season, because NBC Sports is putting game recaps of all the Premier League up there. So I'm a regular viewer now of catch-up services on YouTube. There was a couple of other really interesting points where I just want to touch on. There's been this argument going on in the press between linear AVOD services, the services I like to call FAST services, free ad-supported television services. And they've basically been trying to one-up each other with monthly active users. And I pointed out that it's not even clear that they measure monthly active users the same. So it's very difficult to say who's who and who's ahead. But the last time that Pluto TV put out the number of the MAUs they had, they said they had 18 million. But Tubi TV said earlier that it had 20 million. Well, it turns out that TiVo went out and asked people which ones that they were watching, and it turns out actually more people are watching Pluto TV, 18.5%, and Tubi, 16.2%. So I will say that Tubi is growing much faster. This is 23% increase over last year, and Pluto's only up 4.5%. So. But what that tells you is a lot of people are actually now finding and using these free linear services, which I think is something that we've talked about a lot on our podcast, and is definitely something that we're seeing strongly in the market now.
I agree, and we've talked about the Roku channel before and all the free content and how that's become a big driver of their revenue as well. So. I was actually impressed when I looked through the report. I was impressed that Pluto TV is up to 18.5% of respondents using the service. That, I thought, seemed pretty healthy.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? One of the interesting things, one strategy that Pluto has taken, and I think Tubi as well, is that they're partnering with smart TV manufacturers, Will. And so basically when you buy a new smart TV, plug it in, and the first thing you do is it asks you to hook it up to your home Wi-Fi, and bingo, you can start watching Pluto TV right away. So I think that strategy is really paying off for a lot of people. As people buy new TVs, they activate and they start watching. The interesting thing, though, Will, I think probably this is probably the last point I should make on this, is they also said that TV sites, so sites put up by people like ABC and Cartoon Network and whatnot, a lot of them are falling in usage, which I found really interesting. So, you know, at the same time as Pluto and Tubi are really growing strongly in usage, the TV sites are not. They're actually falling. And I wonder if this is a sort of rub-off effect of basically people beginning to spend a lot less time with traditional TV, traditional linear TV, and more time with online services, and just the reasons for going to those TV sites. Well, they're not as engaged with the content anymore, and they're just not going there to catch up or watch. Or I don't know, maybe the sites themselves, they aren't providing much interesting content. I don't know. What do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the mystery data points from the report, a little bit hard to understand. And the other one was that TiVo found that usage of virtual MVPDs as a primary service had dropped across the board. Also, Hulu was down slightly. DirecTV Now, of course, which is now AT&T TV Now, had dropped. Sling TV was down just a little bit. But at the same time, we know that the services have actually all grown, except for DirecTV Now. We know they shrunk, but all the other services have grown in the past year. So it's a little bit hard to understand also that data point. So I don't know. Did you have any take on that?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I look back at the numbers, and I know Sling TV's had a little bit of trouble in Q1, but you know they have grown year over year. They're 150,000 up. Hulu Live has grown really strongly, reportedly up 1 million subscribers, and YouTube as well has just reportedly passed the 1 million subscriber mark. So I'm a little bit at a loss, like you, Will. I think the only explanation I can think of, maybe, is that, you know, these are typically family services, so when somebody subscribes in the family, they share it, and maybe multiple family members actually give it a try. But actually they've found after a while that, you know, several of the family members have found that they really don't use it. And, you know, I can understand that, particularly if for younger folks where linear really just isn't a big deal for them. When they fire up this service and find it's mostly linear content that's available, well, I could imagine that they would take one look and say, yeah, I'm not so interested. So I don't know, maybe that's what's going on there.
Yeah, that's one of the ones we're going to, I think, want to keep a close eye on in subsequent quarters, because the virtual MVPDs, as we have talked in the past, have been really critical to stabilizing the overall industry as people cut the cord on traditional services, although even that trend has softened up a little bit in the last couple of quarters. So So sometimes the data is a little bit confusing for us, but we'll certainly keep an eye.
We sure will. But I think we're just about out of time, Will.
I think we are, Colin. So have a good trip to IBC. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.